Hello and welcome to Sip for Speech, the podcast for professionals in public finance. A very happy December to all of our listeners. The approach to the festive season is feeling very much like a sprint to the finish here at SIPFA. I imagine it's much the same for many of your organisations, which is why we're very grateful to this episode's speakers for joining us at such a busy time. We're talking sustainability this week, and we'll be joined later in the episode by Adept President Nigel Rigler to dig into the Prime Minister's 10-point plan for climate change. But first of all, my colleague Cal Hager sat down with SIPFA Chief Economist Jeff Matsu to discuss the economic levers that influence climate policy.
Thanks so much for being here today, Jeff.
Happy to be here.
Given it's such an important topic, Jeff, we'd love to hear your thoughts on climate change as SIPFA's chief economist. Since we're a public finance institute, shall we start with an overview of some of the key economic frameworks that influence the way the public sector operates?
Sure. First and foremost, public finances really rely on there being consideration for both near-term and long-term goals. So as governments, whether they're local, national, they need to take that into account as they manage public finances to ensure that sufficient discount rates are used to value future costs and future benefits. And I think one of the really important things with climate change is illustrating this dichotomy between near-term and long-term goals. Climate change is something that affects us many years, you know, if not decades from today, versus things like the pandemic is something that is very here and now. It's really incumbent on public policy to be the framework that equalizes these two time horizons. I think that's what we at SIPFA are trying to do in partnership with local and national government.
What are some practical examples of the frameworks or some of the progress that's been made on that front, kind of managing and addressing that dichotomy?
In terms of climate change, some of the overarching frameworks are commitment to net zero carbon by 2050. The UK is a signatory to the UN's Sustainable Development Goals, which climate change is one of 17 goals. So we do have these national commitments. So this isn't just some touchy-feely kind of thing. All of these are structured within quite specific frameworks. Take, for example, the SDGs. There's 17 goals. Governments are monitoring their performance across each of these. And within each of the 17, there are more specific targets that in many ways help governments assess whether or not they're achieving what they say that they desire to target. And so the SDGs is one framework. In terms of climate change specifically, there's a lot of activity that's happening across government. The monetary authorities, the Bank of England specifically, is very progressive in its thinking in terms of how financial stability is very important to the climate change agenda and to make sure that businesses and financial institutions in particular have frameworks for themselves in which to ensure that these national goals for climate change and making sure that we stay within our predefined commitments is achieved in a way that secures financial stability across the country. And so that's just a couple of examples that there are these very broad frameworks. And the truth of the matter is that a lot of what will happen will be very organic in nature. And so a lot of these national and international endeavors are really, to some extent, just trying things, see what works. But most importantly, it's one of making sure that people are partnering together and that countries are working together, because something like climate change is not bound by national boundaries. And so to achieve many of the goals within the SDGs require global cooperation.
Right. And kind of parking the international cooperation component of that aside, you mentioned there's so many different initiatives and endeavors going on at the local government level and also the central government level here in the UK. From a public finance perspective, how can public finance professionals, maybe they're accountants, maybe they're not, influence the desired outcomes of these frameworks? And maybe that's the larger frameworks, or maybe that's the incremental milestones that you mentioned.
I think the role of public finance professionals is to ensure that there is sound public financial management across government, whatever level of government that may be. In that process, ensuring that there is sustainability in resourcing, and so that spending and revenue generation over the medium to longer term is sustainable. So we don't want to spend beyond our means. And I think that is a role that our professionals can have a very direct impact on. Another dimension would be ensuring that there is a performance-related dimension, and that's ensuring value for money and making clear what the outcomes are when we spend taxpayer funds. CIPFA has a value for money toolkit that we utilize in partnership with local government. The UK has the Treasury Green Book that is one vehicle for evaluating the kinds of projects that government will undertake. And so there always is a need to rigorously examine costs and benefits, not just at a given point in time, but also being mindful that there are near-term and long-term goals, and that we evaluate across time in a way that's impartial and takes into account the cost that future generations have to face in addressing not only today's spending, but also today's investments.
Right. And so how is the COVID-19, I mean, I think you'll have the greatest visibility on this, but how has the pandemic impacted climate action and outcomes in the public sector so far? Can we see anything yet, or is it something that won't be, you know, more clear or evident later on down the line?
I think there's been both a very large cost and a very large opportunity for the climate change agenda. The pandemic had certainly taken our eyes in the very near term off the climate change agenda, simply because the health crisis required all hands on deck, and there simply wasn't the bandwidth to address the pandemic, let alone Brexit, and then also have bandwidth to fully focus on something as important as climate change. But the opportunity within all of this is that massive amounts of public funds will be still required to help produce a solid and sustainable economic recovery. And public policy has a very critical role in determining how taxpayer funds are used to support this recovery. In terms of climate change, we really hope that government takes a longer term view of economic recovery and uses the funds to support green jobs, green ways of producing, and also in terms of developing communities from an infrastructure perspective, really thinking critically about how it wants local communities to look like that require less need for transportation, that require less reliance on fossil fuel usage. And so there's multiple dimensions what needs to be tackled to progress the climate change agenda. And the amount of public monies that have yet to be used to secure an economic recovery can very much be used to progress that green recovery agenda. But there also is the risk that we fall back on old habits once the pandemic fades and we carry on as we always have done. There is a human tendency to revert back to previous ways of doing. It's more comfortable. In many cases, it can be in the very near term, it can be cheaper to deliver things just based off of existing technologies and existing frameworks. But I don't think that that's going to lead to a robust recovery, because we know that aside from climate change, the economy has shifted structurally in significant ways. And so many jobs, many businesses will no longer thrive in the post-pandemic reality. And that's something that government spending needs to not just acknowledge, but it needs to then change the way it utilizes public funds to ensure that it's supporting new parts of the sector that can not just lead to a more rapid recovery in the economy, but also support the climate change agenda goals. The outlook for climate change depends on a lot of different variables. It depends on obviously environmental ones, but obviously, human behavior and the way the economy operates contribute significantly to climate change. But we need to be realistic and acknowledge that there's a lot that we just don't understand about the environment, about our human actions. There's so many variables that in our economic models, we can't have all changing at once. And so in many times in economic models, we hold many variables constant and we just alter maybe a handful. In reality, we don't have that luxury. businesses and technologies are changing rapidly. The government sector is also evolving in very different ways. Consumers and households, their behaviors, and in terms of everything from the kinds of products and services they consume to what they spend their leisure time on, all of these things contribute immensely to everyone's carbon footprint. My main message on this would be that we should diversify in terms of policy tools, because climate change is something that evolves over a very long space of time, and we don't have a crystal ball. We know that the climate is deteriorating, and that is for sure, but we don't know the exact magnitude and precise timing of everything. So we need to kind of tackle the issue from multiple fronts, but be humble about what we know and what we don't know. But at the end of the day, ensure that we have sound public finances that can carry us through whatever future crisis might present itself. And climate change is just one of these many crises that will eventuate. It's just a matter of sequencing and scale. And so we just really want to make sure that we have the toolkit and financial wherewithal as national governments and as local governments to respond in the most effective way possible.
And I think that's most evident. The other crises that may come our way, COVID-19 was a perfect example of that. It's something that no one anticipated 2 or 3 years ago. Right. That's about all we have time for today, Jeff. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks again to Jeff for joining us this week. Next up is President of ADEPT, Nigel Rigler. Back in November, the Prime Minister launched his 10-point plan for climate change. However, the recent spending review saw the introduction of a £100 billion national infrastructure plan. While this did include investment in green infrastructure and green transport, it did, however, contain, for example, a chunky investment in roads. Nigel joined us to discuss the overall coherency of the policy framework and what will be needed to achieve our net zero ambitions. I'm here with Nigel Rigler, President of the Association of Directors of Environment, Economy, Planning and Transport, more commonly known as ADEPT. Thank you for joining us today, Nigel.
Thank you, Ashley. Pleasure to be with you.
So for our listeners that may not have come across ADEPT before, I imagine many of them will have, but for those that haven't, if you could tell them a little bit about the organisation, the kind of work that you're involved with and your background, how you came to be involved with ADEPT.
So ADEPT, as you say, is the Association of Directors of Environment, Economy, Planning and Transport. So place directors within local government responsible for things like highways, waste management, planning, economic development, libraries, regulatory services, all of those sorts of things that make for a successful place. And we work closely with our colleague public health directors and social services directors, both children's social care and adult social care, as well as finance directors and so on. So we're part of that corporate local government mix and focus on places and creating future places that people are gonna need.
Great, thank you, Nigel. So ADEPT recently joined CIPFA and the Committee on Climate Change in a webinar about sustainability and carbon budgets. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that today. Recently, the Prime Minister launched his 10-point plan for climate change. It was referenced quite heavily in the recent spending review. So in your capacity as President of ADEPT, what were your first thoughts on the 10-point plan? How effective do you think it's set to be?
Well, I suppose it was the 18th of November when I was looking at my notes for this that it was announced. It already seems like a lifetime away. I mean, I think from an ADEPT point of view, we welcome the change in government mindset to seeing green investment as an opportunity to deliver significant jobs and growth and not as a cost or an add-on. I think that was the big shift, I thought, with the Prime Minister's 10-point plan. So we welcome the investment to support the levelling up agenda, and this must be extended to all areas of the country that need support with recovery, local energy generation, reducing carbon and so on. And like others, we've been calling throughout the pandemic for a recovery to be a green recovery, to build back better. However, I do think the plan falls short of the ambitious policy overhaul that perhaps some of us were hoping for. And I think we still need that if the government is internationally going to demonstrate real climate leadership in the run-up to COP26. So while, you know, phase out of petrol and diesel cars and the pledge to build a much larger offshore wind industry were welcome, we need, for example, a much bolder approach to renewable energy and ending gas-fired heating in our homes. You know, as Lord Deben said on the webinar, I think the 10-point plan is pretty good and covers most of the key issues, but we need a roadmap to deliver it. From an ADEPT point of view, we agree with the Climate Change Committee that you know, it is a landmark moment for environment, green investment. It's not business as usual. The government are saying it's not business as usual, but we, you know, we shouldn't delude ourselves. There was £12 billion of investment announced. It wasn't all new money. And when you start to look at what others are saying, so PwC were saying we probably need to spend in the order of £400 billion over the next 10 years. So, you know, I think there's some big policy questions and still some big finance questions to be answered about the 10-point plan.
So you've spoken in particular in the past, and you mentioned in your introduction about the role of place directors. Local authorities are going to have a key role to play, as many of the climate initiatives are going to need to be enacted at that kind of local level. It's an element that Lord Deben was very passionate about on our webinar the other week. So what's your view on that? Tell us a bit more about how place directors play into this agenda.
Well, I think place directors, as part of those corporate management teams, all have a stake in getting our places right. And I think COVID has really shone a light on inequality, poverty and discrimination across the country. And a green recovery must show that the choice is not between creating jobs or improving health. It must be jobs and health. Investment in a green recovery also benefits health and social inclusion. To my way of thinking and to ADEPT's members' way of thinking, this can only be delivered locally. And as president of the Association of Place, we're working very closely with our public health colleagues in ADPH, and at our recent conference, annual conference last month, Janelle de Grouchy, the president of ADPH, was saying councils are the home of prevention, and place directors have a central role to play in that prevention agenda. And I suppose for us as place directors, the challenges are around capacity and skills in our teams. And, you know, that's where we are having those new conversations with colleagues on corporate management teams, developing procurement methods that incentivize and lock in climate benefits and making sure that we can measure and verify those. And as I brought out on the webinar, some of the most exciting new conversations are with chief finance officers and how we need to learn and how we are learning that new language of carbon and adaptation and how we understand where the new packages of finance are and how we attract that finance to flow into local authorities to allow us to shape our places for the future.
So going a bit more detail on one of the points you brought up earlier about the coherency of the policy framework. So you mentioned the spending review, and obviously as well as the 10-point plan for climate change back in November, the spending review saw the launch of the planning white paper. We saw £100 billion worth of national infrastructure funding as part of the national infrastructure plan. There's a big chunk of that for roads. How do you think the government can more effectively bring sustainability policy together into the wider policy framework, and how big a barrier is the lack of coherency at the moment to achieving the government's net zero ambitions?
I made a comment about talking to civil service colleagues who'd identified 40 or so different policy areas that impact on the response to climate change, and how there was really quite a big disconnect between those areas. So if you look, you know, you mentioned the planning white paper, where if you look at the consultation on the planning white paper, it's really interesting to reflect on the fact that is about building homes today that will be around in at least 100 years time, and yet they're not being designed with that in mind. There's barely a mention about either carbon reduction or adaptation to climate change in the consultation around the white paper. We're accepting that they'll need to be retrofitted at some point down the line, and that'll either be private householders who have to foot the bill for that, or it will be the state that has to foot the bill for that. And that just doesn't seem like a very sensible approach to be taking at this point in time when with what we know about climate change. And it goes against, you know, all those cleverer economists than me have done the calculations about what every pound spent now probably saves you between £4 and £8 in future years in terms of either having to retrofit or to deal with the damage then. So I think there is a big disconnect between areas, between transport, between energy, between agriculture, between environment, between waste and housing, and how all those policy areas actually play as a whole to drive the agenda forward. And I almost think that's a bigger challenge for government than the financing challenges sort of thing. I think that is where we really will know whether this is a government that is serious about tackling the climate emergency.
Yeah, it really does seem like the entirety of the policy framework needs to be looked at through this lens rather than this kind of sporadic policy by policy approach that has been very much taken in the past. Moving on from the government approach and Of course, there is a need for governments and large organisations to take concerted action as far as climate change and sustainability and climate resilience is concerned. But in a recent piece that you wrote for the MJ, you touched on the fact that the Prime Minister's 10-point plan doesn't go into any detail on the changes that need to be made to our collective lifestyles, the kind of individual action that needs to be taken by the public. So, I mean, some would argue that this year, given the lockdown and all the restrictions, the public have already been asked to make huge changes to the way they live their lives in order to deal with the immediate crisis that we face. Do you think this might have played a part in having any onus on the public absent from the plan? Have they been asked to, in the sense they've already been asked to do so much, would it have been a political misstep to ask them to do more on this agenda as well?
I think that's it's an interesting reflection about whether we're asking people to do more. I think would have been asking people to do more at a time when they've got real heightened awareness of how they can impact the agenda. So I think during lockdown, people have become much more connected. Well, they've become much more aware of their home environment and what that does or doesn't allow them to do, and very conscious of how their home relates to their local place and how close services are or aren't, and the choices that they make about accessing those services, either by public transport or car or walking or cycling. The same goes for shopping and schools and all those things we need day to day. I think COVID has brought home to people actually some of the more unsustainable outcomes of the choices we all make about where we work, where we live, and how we behave in our local places. So I don't know whether the government thought it was asking too much. I think they will have missed a trick by not including the behaviour change side of things in the action plan, because local places must be resilient and sustainable, and so tackling climate change must be about enabling behavioural change, because we're going to have to make changes at a pace and at a scale that no government at any level will be able to deliver on its own. It will have to mobilise its communities and its businesses in a way that it's not really done before, and we've had insight into how you can do that during lockdown sort of thing from a social point of view, and now we're going to have to do exactly the same. And instead of doing it for 6 months, we're going to have to do it for 20 or 30 years to be able to tackle the climate emergency effectively. So I probably agree with you. I was surprised not to see more in the 10-point plan about behavioural change. I would have included it, and I think it would have been included at a time when people would have, at a practical level, would have understood the issues and some of the actions that they can take to change the outcome they have from an environmental point of view.
So lastly, I think a lot of the stuff you've touched on is around the requirement for a stronger, longer term view that takes in the entirety of the policy framework. So based on the current trajectory of government policy, and this might be quite a broad and slightly black and white question, but do you think net zero by 2050 is achievable?
I'm glass half full. I think you have to be around some of this. So I'd say yes. You know, I may have my criticisms about where the government are up to at the moment, but, you know, the 10-point plan was a major step forward, and some of the things that are happening at a practical level running into COP are extremely positive and will give us a long-term legacy. I mean, from an adept point of view, we've called for greater policy coherence across government. You know, achieving net zero is a colossal challenge and requires a properly joined up approach. And so we will continue to urge that all programmes and funding across different departments, whether energy, transport, environment, housing, agriculture and so on, reflect climate imperatives. And I think we have some allies there. So I think the National Audit Office, for example, has published two important reports recently, which show that more needs to be done to give more coherence and drive to the government's environment and climate ambitions. And we've got the Committee on Climate Change and Lord Deben last week talking about their work and their publication this week of the sixth carbon budget. I think those allies who are holding government to account, I think will help to make sure that the rhetoric continues to be turned into real, genuine action that positions the UK internationally in a very different way and very much leading the agenda globally. I just hope that government doesn't forget that a lot of that real practical action needs to happen at the local level, and that well-resourced local government mobilising its communities and businesses at scale and at pace is where all that success will need to come from if we're genuinely going to tackle the climate emergency.
Amazing. It's always great to be able to leave these things on a slightly more optimistic note. So for our listeners out there who would like any more information information, you'll be able to find references to the reports that Nigel has spoken about and the webinar that he mentioned in the description below. But in the meantime, thank you very much, Nigel, for your time today.
Thank you, Ashley.
You've been listening to SITFA Speaks, and that was Nigel Rigler, President of ADEPT. In addition to the reports that Nigel referenced, the Committee on Climate Change has now issued its sixth carbon budget, which features a specific deep dive into the role of local authorities in the climate change agenda. More information can be found on that report in the description below, along with the reports that Nigel referenced. That about wraps it up for this episode. Thank you to all of our guests for joining us. We'll be taking a break now over the festive period, but we look forward to coming back to you again in January. Bye for now, and we'll see you again next time.